Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful southwest Florida, Naples, Fort Myers area. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. It's a hot and humid day here. Got up to 91 yesterday. I think yesterday was our first day of the year to hit the 90 mark, and there will be many others coming up soon. No question about that. Good to have all of you along with us this afternoon. We've got a guest coming up around 3:30 today, somebody that contacted us that wanted to talk about the book and the publisher, and actually it's Dr. Paul Boer. He's an MD, and he's a professor at the University of Texas, and we're going to talk about bioterrorism, which is a very interesting subject, and he will tell us, he'll tell us what we need to fear and what we don't need to fear and where we're at and where the nation is at right now on battling bioterrorism. We've had a little bit of it with the anthrax scare just a few years back, and there are other things that we need to look out for, and he'll explain the whole thing, why we need to be concerned, what we need to be concerned about, and what we don't need to be concerned about. And of course, the worst thing about anything like bioterrorism, they'll never be able to do it on a huge scale, is the fear and terror that it spreads. So then that's what terrorism is all about, not necessarily to kill millions of people, but to put the fear in many people and achieve your goals that way. So we'll be talking to him coming up around 3:30 today. He's coming to us from Texas, I guess it is. Yeah, the University of Texas. He's a professor there. Quite a bit happened since yesterday, I guess. Nothing absolutely earth-shattering, I don't think. We had more on the story about the rescue of Captain Phillips from the Maersk, Alabama. You know, Hannity wants an investigation into when the order was given, and Limbaugh went absolutely nuts over it. You've heard comment on that. They just can't stand to have this president praised for any success. It's really killing them. And they look worse and more shrill every single day, I think. They're defeating their own purpose, I believe. And they're looking rather pathetic right now, don't you think? Those on the right, it's incredible, really. President Obama hasn't been in office, 100 days? And yet the massive Republican noise machine is just lambasting him 24/7 with every kind of crazy, nonsensical drivel that they can muster. I have to admit, I'm fascinated at the depths to which they'll sink. There's countless lawsuits now challenging his legitimacy. Those are in motion. The hate groups are in full battle mode. People stocking up on weapons and ammo and dispensing hate speech at what I believe is probably a previously unknown pace. I've never seen anything like it in my adult lifetime, anyway. Before the rescue of the captain, they were going on about, here we go, another Democrat who's afraid to do anything, not knowing that behind the scenes, coolly, calmly, President Obama was in on a plan to rescue the captain. He considered it, he weighed it, looked at all the options, and he gave his permission to go with the plan. Hardly reticent to do anything about it, he was just waiting for the right time, the right plan, carefully considered it, and had them carry it out. So it was a success. And for anybody to think that, well, this was all President Obama's doing, completely wrong. Just as it was completely wrong to blame the desert sands for ruining those choppers when they tried to rescue the hostages in Iran. They tried to place all the blame on Jimmy Carter for that. It was a well-planned mission. Just didn't know they were going to run into a terrible sandstorm in the desert. Who knew? So it's just like the quarterback in football. Sometimes they get too much credit for the victory, and sometimes they get too much blame for the defeat, and that's how it is with this deal right now going on with the captain. Yes, the president did the right thing. I'm very glad it turned out okay. You can certainly see with those boats bobbing up and down in the water that things could have gone terribly wrong, but they went well. And as I heard somebody say yesterday, it's people like to follow around a guy that's got good luck. Well, so far, President Obama's had good luck, and that's a serious thing. They said he'd be tested early on, and this was a test of a leader. And it turned out great. And I'm so happy for the family. And hopefully it'll show these pirates that you don't mess with Uncle Sam. We shall see. But the Republicans' popularity right now is at an all-time low. I think it's somewhere down around 31% of Republicans in general. And I think they feel compelled to fight like a cornered rat with obviously no rationality involved in the whole thing. There's no truth involved to their screaming at calling Obama a fascist and the like. Socialism, they scream. You know, like we're all going to be wearing uniforms and eating at the community commissary any day now and harvesting wheat by hand out in the fields. I don't think they realize that they're sounding like, well, I just don't think they know how bad they're sounding. I really don't. There's no alternative ideas coming from them. There's no public discourse from them involving anything resembling reason. And they're on the outside looking in, and they're coming unglued, knowing that there isn't much of anything they can do to reverse the results of the last election right now. And naturally, they're doing what they do best. They're throwing mud, hoping some of it's going to stick, and instead they look to me like a bunch of third graders. You know how the third grader kids get together and go, you know, I'm not, but you are. You know, that kind of logic. But thankfully, and we see the evidence everywhere, that the majority of American people are aware of the Republicans' and conservatives' juvenile tactics, and they're tuning them out. And I really think they're making themselves irrelevant and may well be contributing to the ultimate demise of the Republican Party, at least the Republican Party that we've known about for decades now. They're living in the past. They worship Ronald Reagan and his discredited policy, and they worship at the altar of tax cuts for the rich. And it's just not working out for them. It's not working out for them at all. You know, I heard criticism from Cal Thomas and a couple of others that Obama hasn't been going to church every Sunday. Well, isn't that something? First, he was a Muslim of some sort. They were trying to make that a bad thing, that he was a Muslim. And he was not. And then, you know, that he wasn't Christian. And then when he showed he was Christian and go to a Christian church, then he's gone to the wrong Christian church. And now he doesn't go to church every Sunday, so that's really bad. You know who was the father of all these family values in the Republican Party? Who is the man they worship, the altar that they all worship at, you know? That's right, St. Ronald of Reagan. And they worship Ronald Reagan, and he never went to church. Never. Did you hear anybody talking about Ronald Reagan not going to church? Huh? Did you? They asked old Ronnie one time why he didn't go to church, and he said, well, he didn't want to cause problems at a church by having the president go, you know, and cause a real uproar and everything. He didn't want to go. Well, here's a man that, to hear everybody talk, was a saint. Here's a man that was all by himself, evidently, to hear a lot of people say it, brought on the family values that the Republicans all know and love. Here's a man that preached about this being a Christian nation. Here's a man that got the fundies behind him, the fundamentalist evangelicals behind him. And here's a man that never went to church. And I don't care if Ronald Reagan went to church. I don't care. It doesn't bother me whatsoever. It doesn't bother me if any of the presidents ever go to church. I don't care. But the hypocrisy from these people is just stunning. It really is just stunning. Oh, well. Yeah, Hannity actually wants a investigation into when the order was given and over this thing yesterday. And kind of a sad note, I found this sad. I know the announcer of the Philadelphia Phillies passed away yesterday, but a guy, even a lot of you young folks will recognize, former pitching star Mark the Bird Fidrich was found dead. Former Detroit Tiger pitcher Mark Fidrich, whose wild antics on the mound captivated the baseball world during the summer of 1976. And it was. It was a treat for baseball to have this guy in here. He was found dead yesterday at his farm in Northborough, Massachusetts. He was only 54. And the local district attorney said that Fidrich's body was beneath a 10-wheel dump truck that he used to haul asphalt or gravel, and that his death was accidental. They call him the Bird because his resemblance to Sesame Seed's Big Bird. And a lot of you remember, Fidrich rocketed to fame. It didn't matter if you were a baseball fan or not. But in 1976, he won 19 games and lost just 9 and had only a 2.34 earned run average, which is spectacular. It was the best in American League that year. And he was on the All-Star team, and he was Rookie of the Year, and he actually completed 24 games, which is amazing for a rookie. And his behavior on the field was a sight. It really was. He would often talk to the baseball. He'd pat down the dirt and run over to his teammates to congratulate him for making good plays when he was pitching. He was a real joy. And his fortunes took really a bad turn during the 77 season when he hurt his knee. And it put him on the disabled list. And he tried and tried and tried over the years to come back, but he never did. He never made it. And he finally gave up in 1983. So he left the Tigers with his major league record at 29 wins and 19 losses. And Mark Fidrich. The world misses a guy like that. He was a happy-go-lucky, fun kind of guy. And it's a doggone shame that he had an accident like that. So Mark Fidrich gone at the age of only 54. Have you got your tax refund back yet? No? Yes? Well, when you get it back, you're going to go on a wild shopping spree, anybody? Some Americans will do that once they get their tax refund, but a very, very small number, according to the Associated Press poll that came out yesterday. A survey says that just 5% of the people plan to take their tax refund money and spend like crazy, which is about the same percentage it was in 2008. By far, and naturally so, most people plan to pay down their debts, including bills owed on housing and credit cards and utilities. 54% of Americans are getting money back from Uncle Sam, and most of them are just going to pay bills with it. Well, that makes sense, doesn't it? A lot of people got outstanding bills right now. But 57% of taxpayers will receive refunds averaging $2,700. It's a couple hundred bucks over from, up from their 2008 returns. I hadn't realized it would be that high. Wow. And bankruptcies are on the rise again in the U.S., and I want to talk about that a little later in the program today. We had hoped to have a bankruptcy attorney on with us today, but he could not make it. But we're going to talk about bankruptcy and the effects of it anyway today. You remember, all of you remember, I was steamed then and still am steamed about it. Congress passed a law to make it tougher for businesses and individuals to file bankruptcy in the U.S., the bankruptcy bill. You all remember that? But by the looks of things today, wherever you see it, it really didn't work. But I don't think anybody at the time realized how bad things would get and what a hole we were digging into. Over the last 12 months, I dug up some figures. There were 1.2 million filings for bankruptcy protection. And the number could reach 1.5 million in 2009 alone and finally level off at a 1.6 million next year. To put that into further perspective, Close to 131,000 individuals and businesses sought bankruptcy protection in March alone. And that's a 46% increase from a year ago and an 81% jump from March of 2007. And when they passed the bankruptcy bill in 2005, it was meant to end bankruptcy abuses. Initially, it did have an impact, which, it drastically reduced filings from an all-time high of 2 million in 2005 to only 600,000 the following year. It made it very, very, very difficult for people to get out from under a lot of their debts, even through bankruptcy. But this rotten economy changed all that, and many people were left with no choice but to seek bankruptcy protection, even with the higher filing fees and more restrictions that there are now. And later in the program, after we have our guest on today, who's going to talk about bioterrorism, by the way, once again, we'll talk about bankruptcy and Chapter 7 and Chapter 13, and if it in fact does work and get people the relief that they need. After all, that's what bankruptcy's for. Bankruptcy is not to screw companies or people owed a lot of money, owed money from people. That's not what it's for. It's to provide relief when there's no other way for someone. And while it's true there have been abuses over the years, I think now we can see that bankruptcy protection is very necessary for a lot of people. Or would you rather have it that we have debtors' prisons once again, like they used to in the old country? I think you ask some of the bankers, and they would probably go for that, would they not? A cruel lot, are they not? Now they're talking about, oh my, we can't get enough money in the banking industry here in America. We're going to quit our jobs on Wall Street, and we're going to go with some new firms. We're going to go with foreign firms. What is that, a threat of some kind? Go. If you can't get your, you know, ten figure income with, why go someplace else? I don't care. I would like to see everybody on Wall Street, all the fat cats, quit and get a whole new crew in there. Not that it would make a whole lot of difference. Really, it probably wouldn't. We've still got 10 minutes yet until our guest comes on. We are going to talk about bankruptcy later on in the program today, and just to give you an idea about some of it. Actually, now if you go in and file bankruptcy, you can do a Chapter 7 and Chapter 13, and I guess you can still do a Chapter 11, and we'll try and explain the difference between them. Hey, tomorrow, before I forget, don't forget that tomorrow, and I know many of you want to get out in early in the morning and get ready to go to your local tea parties, these tea bag parties. We're going to have one here in Fort Myers tomorrow, and I haven't seen whether or not Senator Larry Craig is going to attend any of these tea bag parties. That was cruel, wasn't it? wouldn't Senator Larry Craig be the guest of honor at the tea bag parties? I'm just saying. If that's over your head, that's good. If not, you can have a nasty laugh with me over that. There's going to be one of these tea parties here locally in Fort Myers. I suppose they'll throw the tea in the Caloosahatchee River, big, beautiful river that we have here. And it's being led by the local 24/7 right-wing talk radio station, Wink WNOG, and their morning host, Mandy Connell. Their insufferable, loud-mouthed, foghorn-voiced bitch who apparently has the IQ of about 60, which quite naturally would make her queen of the local Republicans. I should go just for the fun of it. Don't you find it odd that these people are out protesting President Obama instead of the credit card companies who are going crazy, raising people's rates at the moment and cutting off their credit at the moment, even raising rates on people who've never been late, people who've never had, you know, that have had their cards for years and have excellent credit. So, going to be lots of tea parties around tomorrow. And maybe you'll want to join one and go out and protest. The protest, let's face it, it's not about taxation, really. It's about President Obama. That's what these are about, and that's why Fox News has been cheerleading it on. Fox News has been the big sponsor of this thing. They don't want to claim sponsorship, but that's what it's been. Absolutely what it's been. So, I don't know. I probably am not going to make it to the tea parties. I would like to. I'd like to go down and see what a group of local idiots, don't know how many local idiots there will be, but it will be led by this, you really have to hear her to believe it, the local morning show host, 9 to noon, or that's not 9 to noon, I think 5:30 a.m. until 9. Just a loony, stupid woman named Mandy Connell, who's the local host, and just knows it all. Gets up every morning and does her show prep out of the newspaper, reads stories out of the newspaper, and comments off the cuff about them. And her comments are just usually mostly uninformed and just plain stupid. She's not a very bright woman. But she works for the local right-wing radio station, and I guess she has to repeat the mantra. Although she's into it. She's not doing something she doesn't want to do. She's into it. We live in a community here where it's mostly right-wingers, and she knows it, and she knows that she can get up and tell the biggest lies and prevarications that there ever was on the face of the earth, and they'll all swallow it, and they'll all buy it, and say, "That's right, matey." That's why I said with her IQ, she's probably queen of them, because you ought to hear some of the callers that call into the local shows. It's incredible. It's just I'm embarrassed. I tune in once in a while in the morning just for a good laugh, because it is, you know, you've got your redneck Floridians calling in, and it's just, I don't know, the people are just goofy. Some of these rednecks. Florida crackers. And that brings me to this question. Do you know why it's so hard to solve a redneck murder? I can't resist it. The DNA all matches, and there are no dental records. How do you like that? Hey, we're going to pause for a break while we get a hold of our guest. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight is fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to the
cops. Hello.
Everybody wants to buy lots of chocolate. So long still knows.
Hello.
Hello, Professor. Are you with us?
Hello.
Good afternoon, Professor. Hello, Professor. Are you with us? Let me turn this up just a little bit here. Good afternoon, Professor. Are you with us?
Hello.
Let me try and turn the volume up here just a little bit. I'll try redialing that. I am having so much trouble with this new phone. Nothing like live radio, huh? see how this works this time.
Hello?
Hello, Professor.
Hello?
Professor Boyer?
Hello?
Hello? Ah, oh, jeez. Hello, Professor Boyer? Chat room said you can hear your call and hear the call. You could hear him and you could probably hear me, but he and I don't hear each other. I'm so excited over this new phone system. Let's see what we can do about this here. Hopefully he'll call me in just a moment. That was the original plan anyway. Let me go back to the break, and we'll be back in just a second.
Hello?
Hello,
Professor, are you there? Hello? Hello, Professor, are you there? Some kind of trouble here. I don't know what it is exactly. I wish I did know.
Hello.
Hello, Professor. Are you there? Well, let's keep trying this.
That's very strange.
Hello.
Having one of those problem days here somehow. I don't know what it is exactly. I cannot get our phone system to work. That makes for a good day on a talk show. Sure does. I don't know whether it's on the professor's end or my end. I just don't know. Anyway, that's embarrassing. Let's try this again. Hello, Professor? Hello, anybody there? Hello? Let's try this. How about it? Are you there, Professor? Check.
like a shout from the family he made in a little white house by the woods. Dropped the kids at the mission with a rose for the virgin. She knew he was gone for good. It's a long way to heaven. It's closer to Harrisburg, and that's still a long way from the place where we are and if people exist. It's a pair of train tracks, and the devil is a railroad car. Train tracks kept going. It seems like they always left soon. And the people he ran with, they moaned low and painful, sang sad miseraires to the moon. It's a long way to heaven. It's closer to Harrisburg. That's still a long way from the place where we are. And if people exist, it's train tracks, and the devil is a railroad car. The drunkard from pain. Tell me, I believe that the Garden of Eden was burned to make way for a train, for a train. It's a long way to heaven. It's closer to Harrisburg, and man, that's still a long way from the place where we are. And if evil exists, it's a pair of train tracks, and the devil is the railroad.
Well, we are back with another, after another embarrassment with this phone, new phone system thing we're using here. I have no idea. I have no idea what's wrong. Please accept my apologies. We had a good interview scheduled. It's really troubling when you spend a long time getting ready for an interview with somebody and you can't get through with it. What a shame! What a shame! Anyway, we'll try and rectify that for tomorrow, I guess. Wish we could do something different, but we can't. Have I kicked the phone? Yes. Yet I would like to. You know, it's the amazing thing. You don't haven't touched the phone since last week, and it worked last Thursday. Haven't done a thing. Haven't changed a thing. No dials. Nothing. Have changed not a thing, and yet it doesn't work today. And I'm embarrassed about it. So sorry about that, gang. We'll have Professor Boer back on some other time. We'll just have to work on it and see what we can do. My apologies. Anyway, you know, a real professional right now wouldn't be flustered over this, but I am. We were talking about bankruptcy a little earlier. And a lot of people are under the impression that since this bankruptcy bill, that there's no hope even in filing bankruptcy. And I think we found out now and found out that there is relief with bankruptcy. And we had hoped to have a bankruptcy attorney on with us today, but he said he couldn't make it. I guess it's, even if he could, if we wouldn't have been able to talk to him. But there's some common questions about personal bankruptcy that a lot of people are completely in the dark about. Since the bankruptcy bill, a lot of people think they can't get out from under credit card bills and all this, which is what actually bankruptcy was invented for in the first place. And, you know, a lot of people ask the question, will they lose anything if they file for personal bankruptcy? And really, you can file bankruptcy and retain all of your personal belongings, including your house and your car and your all your household goods and all that. And you can get a lawyer that'll make sure that all of your personal belongings are protected. And if you owe more in your car than the car is worth, the bankruptcy court, they're not going to sell your car. Well, really, because after the sale, there wouldn't be any money left to make a distribution to your creditors. And the same thing goes with your home and personal property. And here in Florida, whether they're not going to take your home, I mean, you can lose it in a proceeding anyway if you don't pay for it. But even if your property is worth more than what you owed on it, usually they can take the state bankruptcy exemptions to protect those items, your house and your car and your personal property. And you might be at a whole lot more risk of losing your property if you don't file bankruptcy, because creditors can sue you and attach your bank accounts and garnish your wages and attach and seize your property. And as a result, you might miss your rent, your mortgage, your car payment, making it difficult to provide even the most basic of necessities. And a lot of people are talking about right now that the internet is alive with people talking about creditors harassing them. We hear stories, horror stories about that, umpteen phone calls a day and this and that. There are laws that protect you against that sort of thing. But if you file bankruptcy and you get a client record number, then all you have to do is refer all the future creditor calls to your bankruptcy attorney, and the creditors aren't allowed to call you anymore. So that's one thing. They can put a stop to that. And a lot of people wonder about the spouse. Well, on if the debts are in your name only, your spouse doesn't have to file bankruptcy, and creditors usually can't pursue a non-bankruptcy filing spouse and unless they're a co-debtor on the debt. And additionally, the bankruptcy should not be reflected on the non-filing spouse's credit report. It cannot be. So the law does vary from state to state, so make sure that you ask a decent lawyer to find out about that. And the other thing is, a lot of people say, well, if I file bankruptcy, it's, you know, it's really embarrassing. And, well, maybe it is. But really the only parties that receive notice of the bankruptcy are your creditors and the bankruptcy court and the IRS. And generally, the bankruptcy will have no effect whatsoever on your taxes. Your employer won't be notified of the bankruptcy unless your employer is also a creditor. And the bankruptcy is public record, so anyone who wants to find out could determine that you filed. But generally, however, you and your creditors and the IRS will know about the bankruptcy, and that's all. People worry about, if they file bankruptcy, if they sell their home, will they be able to rent? Stop and think about that. There were over 1 million bankruptcies filed in the U.S. last year. And common sense is going to tell you that those people aren't living out in the street, most of them anyway. And if you're presently renting a home or an apartment, usually your landlord will renew your lease without running an updated credit report and won't even have any knowledge that you even filed a bankruptcy. And if you're applying for a new lease, There could be some slight difficulties that can really easily be overcome. They found that that larger leasing companies usually have stricter policies regarding leasing to applicants with, you know, damaged credit. But remember that it's the blemished credit report, not necessarily the bankruptcy, that's reflecting poorly on your application. And so with no outstanding debt and you've just gone through a bankruptcy, you're probably a better credit risk in a lot of cases than other applicants who have such debt and bad credit reports. So you're starting off with a clean slate, and a lot of renters, they'll help you out with it. How do you determine whether or not you should file a bankruptcy or not? Are you being sued? If you're being sued and you own a home, you should talk to a bankruptcy attorney. Talk to them immediately. Don't put it off. A bankruptcy will stop a lawsuit in its tracks and prevent your creditors from putting a lien on your home or garnishing your wages or anything like that. If your home's being foreclosed or your car's about to be repossessed, if either of those are the case, very often bankruptcy may prevent the foreclosed action or the repossession from proceeding and give you some time to consolidate your mortgage arrears or your balance on your car that you're behind. And if your house is being foreclosed or your car's about to be repossessed, Chapter 7 bankruptcy might not be an option. Chapter 13 may save your house and your car. And a lot of people wonder, do credit cards or medical bills have you so deep in debt that it's hard for you to save for the future? And if you are only paying the minimum on your credit card bills from month to month, generally from 2 to 3% of the outstanding balance, and the interest rate is only 15%, it's going to take you 20 years to pay off a $10,000 debt. A lot of people don't think about that. And do you really want to be in the same financial situation in 20 years? So Chapter 7 bankruptcy can provide you with really a fresh start that you're entitled to under the law, and you can get out of debt now. And then there's a problem a lot of people talk about. Well, filing bankruptcy, is immoral, or does it make me a bad person? Hey, everybody, and a lot of people don't think about this, everybody's entitled to a fresh start. Many times things happen in people's lives that you just can't expect. You might have a sudden loss in income. You may have lost your job. You may have had your hours cut. You may have a family medical catastrophe, some sort of a work injury that's not covered by workman's comp. Yeah, I don't have to tell you there's a whole host of things that can throw you into financial difficulty, especially these days. And so it is possible to get some help with that, and you can't plan on these things happening, so it doesn't make you a bad person. A lot of people suffer under that. I filed bankruptcy. Is something wrong with me? No. Bankruptcy's there as a relief for people who have had problems and encountered problems that they can't handle. And in the real world, that happens all the time. You can walk by people every day that have gone through this and have had the medical bills or insurmountable debts, a pile of debts that they just can't get over through no fault of their own. And even if you have, even if it's your fault, even if you've gone out and spent too much, and maybe you live too high and all that, you've made a mistake. And you've made deals with companies. These are business deals for a credit card or buying a house or buying a car. They're business deals. This isn't what your moral fabric is made out of. This is a business deal you've made. Just no different than the people on Wall Street, Goldman Sachs, or any of the companies, for example, that went belly up. They made business deals with companies and couldn't pay their debts. Does that make everybody there immoral or bad people? No, it doesn't. And it's the same is true with personal bankruptcy. There's no different than company filing. It's people that have gotten themselves in trouble. And you're right, on the chat room, Donald Trump has filed bankruptcy a couple of times, and look, he's got himself a TV show. So everybody is entitled to a fresh start. Lots of people do have problems that they couldn't help, medical bills or whatnot. And, you know, for most people, bankruptcy is the last resort. And a lot of people have a hard time deciding whether or not they should file bankruptcy. And you also have to look out for lawyers that are all too eager to have you file bankruptcy, and maybe that's not necessarily the right course of action for you. So you got to ask yourself, are the credit card companies concerned about your financial difficulties? No. Are you paying your creditors instead of saving for your kids' education or your retirement? You know, it's important for an attorney to provide bankruptcy and non-bankruptcy alternatives. If an attorney's legit, he should tell you all the avenues that you might need to go down. So does it make you a bad person? No. In this day and age, so many people are having financial problems. And there are plenty of good attorneys out there, honest attorneys that can help you through this. And you want to find somebody that's got experience with this sort of thing. And they'll tell you whether or not that a personal bankruptcy is the right thing for you. And a lot of people worry, well, you know, if I file bankruptcy, that'll be it. I'll never be able to get credit again. That's simply not true. That's just simply not true. You can rebuild your credit even after a bankruptcy. Yeah, it's going to take a few years, but it can be done. Many lenders have programs that provide for post-bankruptcy borrowers to even get home financing within a year or two after a discharge. And people, you know, you'll start getting solicitations for unsecured credit cards almost immediately because you don't have any debts. So if you're in a mountain of trouble like that, why, hey, it's not the end of the world. It's just not the end of the world, man. Not the end of the world for a lot of people, and doesn't have to be the end of the world for you. I was going to give out the phone number, but I guess it wouldn't do me any good now, would it? we've got the news coming up shortly. I do want to remind you that this is a listener-supported program, and we are having a fun drive, and I'd like for everybody to go over and take a look at our blog. TheGuyJamesShow.com/blog. TheGuyJamesShow.com/blog. Everybody's in the chat room, everybody listening on iTunes and all that, go over and take a look at the blog right now, would you? TheGuyJamesShow.com/blog. Go over and take a look. I hope you will. If you do, you'll see some of my thoughts there that I wrote in while I was in not so good a mood. And do I regret? No, I do not regret anything I wrote. But I'll let you read it for yourself and decide whether I'm over the top or not. I don't think so. I've been talking for a long time about the failure of the left to support talk radio. That's why we have no presence in talk radio, is because we haven't gotten the support we need. And you know, the right-wingers get some of these big think tanks and wealthy people to support it. Well, if Barack Obama could get millions of small donations for his election, I don't know why millions of small donations for liberal talk radio couldn't come in and help them out. It wouldn't take near as much money as it took to elect our president, I can tell you that right now. So I hope you'll consider that. TheGuyJamesShow.com/blog, and if you'd like to donate to the program, and I hope you will, and I thank the two that did since we put up our fun drive on the blog, Sue in California and Sophie, I'd like to thank you very much. And you can do that by going to TheGuyJamesShow.com, and there's a place on there where you can donate to the program. So we'll be back in, well, right after the news anyway, so don't go away.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The AFL-CIO is launching Corporate Paywatch, a website highlighting the double standard between how workers and executives are compensated. That site points out how corporate execs who oppose expanding workers' union rights to improve worker wages lavish themselves with extremely generous compensation packages. 46% of CEOs have explicit written contracts, while just 14% of all workers do. Bank of America took $25 billion in hard-earned tax money from workers, for example, to avoid bankruptcy. Yet while taking that workers' money, it works against workers' rights. The AFL-CIO compares executive contracts with opposition to the Employee Free Choice Act, focusing on Walmart, Bank of America, and FedEx. Hotels in New York City are trying to renege on a 3.5% pay raise scheduled to start for hotel workers in July. The Hotel Association of New York is claiming hard times, and they say it's impossible to pay the raise. The New York Hotel and Motel Trades Council, though, isn't ready to give up the raise. It says hotels in New York City have had 10 very prosperous years and should have set aside some money for hard times. Since December, 4,000 hotel workers have been laid off in New York City. Did you get a raise or a wage freeze this year? If you're an ExxonMobil executive, you likely saw a pay increase of 10% in 2008. ExxonMobil chief executive Rex Tillerson's base salary jumped to $2.06 million this year, and when stock options and compensation for items such as personal use of a company aircraft and personal security are factored in, his compensation levels out to around $23.9 million. Connecticut could be one step closer to solving a budget crisis, but it comes at a high cost to state workers. Jesse Russell reports.
A new deal between unions representing Connecticut state workers and Governor Jody Rell could have a big impact on worker compensation. If the deal is approved, the state would agree to a two-year no-layoff guarantee, while workers would agree to a pay freeze, higher health care co-pays, and unpaid furloughs. An additional part of the deal would be the development of a program designed to encourage older state workers to accept early retirement. According to the Hartford Courant, the 13 unions in the State Worker Coalition plan to meet on April 15th to vote on the current proposal. Here is today's economic report. As workers face the recession, they are looking toward cheap and quick pick-me-ups, according to recent studies. Chocolate has benefited from the recession, with Hershey reporting a 2.6% increase in sales since the same time last year, and Cadbury Company reported an increase of 30%. Attendance at the local Cineplex is also on the rise, with box office sales up 16.5% over the same time last year.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year. And a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
In 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast.
everything we have to fear is fear itself.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show. Democratic and liberal talk show. Sans phones today. Again. Seems like all I do is complain, right? Well, I hate it that the phone isn't working again. You know, it's one of those things that I've often talked about on the program. Didn't touch it since last week. Worked fine on Thursday. Didn't touch it. Didn't alter it in any way whatsoever. And now it doesn't work. checked it before the show. Thought everything was all right. Everything, oh, well. That's what you get for not having an engineer in the studio. A producer, an engineer, all that sort of thing. Someday we'll be able to afford all that stuff, right? We were talking earlier about bankruptcy a bit, and I was talking to an attorney. We were trying to get on the program today about the bankruptcy. You know, for some reason they don't seem all that anxious to talk about it. I don't know why. But it was talking about getting out from under credit card debt that so many people are saddled with right now, and that's going to be the next big jump with problems that we're going to have with toxic debt is going to be the credit cards, because more and more people are getting behind on them right now. And there's only one way. There is a way that you cannot, if you're in, I forget which, if it's 7 or 13 chapter, 7, you can't get out from underneath credit card debt if the judge decides if the creditor goes after you for fraud. And what do they mean by fraud? How does the judge decide if it's fraud or not? The creditor can challenge the discharge of a debt in a bankruptcy if the creditor believes the debt was incurred through fraud. And in a credit card context, that usually means that the creditor alleges that either the card was obtained by using false information. In other words, you might have said that you had a much bigger income than you really had, or you had more years on the job. They will hunt for anything. If you claim you made $19,000 last year and you made $18,899, they'll probably go after you for fraud. They're going to go after anything that you obtained it by using false information, or more frequently that you used the card. The use of the card was fraudulent, and just claiming that the debt was incurred by fraud isn't enough to accept the debt from the discharge. The creditor has to file a timely adversary proceeding in the bankruptcy case and present facts that prove fraud at trial. And here are some of the things that can prove fraud. To decide whether a credit card charge was incurred by fraud, judges sometimes use a checklist of factors that suggest fraud. Since there's seldom explicit evidence of dishonesty, even the suggestion of it is enough for some judges. And those factors which in court weighs in making the decision are, and following is a little bit of a list of them, the length of time between the charges and the bankruptcy filing, or whether or not an attorney had been consulted concerning the filing of bankruptcy before you made charges on your card. In other words, if you went and got an attorney and planned on, made your wishes known to file bankruptcy, and then you went up and went out and maxed out your card after that, why the judge is going to look at that as plain old fraud. You were trying to get away with something, and he's right. Also, the judge will look at the number of charges on the card. He'll look at the amount of the charges, the financial condition of the debtor at the time the charges were made, and whether the charges were above the credit limit of the account. Well, now that one doesn't make sense to me, because do they let you make charges above the credit limit of the account? No. Or whether or not the debtor made multiple charges on the same day. He's looking for abuse. Or whether or not the debtor was employed. If you applied for a card and didn't have a job and said you did, well, you're not going to get out from underneath that credit card debt. Whether or not there was a sudden change in the debtor's buying habits, and whether the purchases made on the card were luxuries or necessities. The factors used vary from one judge to another, and the exact standard, if truly there can be said to be an exact standard, it really differs on where the bankruptcy is filed. So there are a lot of pertinent information, and I brought this all up because I know somebody who's doing this right now, and they're feeling very, very bad about it. Wanted to look up some of it and get the right information for it. It's not as bad as what you think. Sometimes it's a whole lot worse than, you know, in your mind than it really is. Are you going to a teabag party tomorrow? Anybody going to one? I love that name. I don't people understand what they're talking about when they talk about teabagging. That seems to be a private joke with just a few people here. and the big story of the it's oh no Bo. President Obama has a very serious issue on his hands right now with the to a socialist republic, and then they were all over him. It may well. His honesty and his credibility. Now he's going to get a dog from heaven's sake. Ted Kennedy. This may well be in Watergate. Just added together. Might be worse than all of that. I just don't know what to make of some of these people. I really don't. I thought that during the Clinton impeachment that they went way overboard. Just went batshit crazy. But some of the things they're starting to complain about right now with President Obama are just insane. I don't know. Anyone who know who's got them? I'm hearing that we're having streaming problems again. Is that true? Somebody on the internet want to let me know? I thanked Sue from California earlier and Sophie for making contributions on the program, and also wanted to thank Johnny O for his very generous contribution to the program as well. Appreciate it very, very much. Helps keep us going here, and we feel it's important to keep us going. We feel it's important to get a better phone system in here. We'll work on that. Very expensive, by the way. Anyway, I did want to bring this up today as something that sticks in my craw, and I've mentioned it a little bit lately. The more I think about it, the more pissed off I get when it comes down to it. Anybody know who has the most visited website amongst all the political sites? Anybody know? I'm told it's the Huffington Post, that they have more more hits than any other political site. I mean, it's a huge financial success for Arianna Huffington. Maybe some of you realize it, maybe some of you don't. She's a former right-wing commentator. That's right. Some people don't remember that she was a right-wing commentator, and she once had a website asking for the resignation of Bill Clinton called resignation.com. That was Arianna Huffington. So here we have the top progressive website hosted by a former right-winger who's now making buckets of money off of it. And we have a former right-wing radio host as the lead progressive radio host who's also raking in a lot of greenbacks right now. Anybody see a trend here? Anybody smell a rat or two? I do. Bothers me. It bothers me that we don't have the real deal, the real McCoys, call them what you want to. The real people who ought to be leading the media parade. The people who are dyed-in-the-wool liberals. The people who are Democrats. The people who have been there since day one. The people who are perhaps born and raised and lived that kind of life all their lives. Maybe those ought to be the people leading the liberal progressive movement. Maybe those should be the people. Maybe they're the people who are more sincere. Maybe those are the people that are liberal to the bone. People who live their lives that way. People who have built their belief system on that. Instead, we get phonies. That bothers me, and we're willing to put up with it. And people are duped, once again. I don't know. Bothers me. Always will, I think. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a minute or two. Don't go away.
Oh, this is the end of the universe. This next song is called I've Seen the Rain, and it was written by my daddy, Mr. Jim Moore. He wrote it back in Vietnam about 40 years ago, and I grew up singing it with him at different Vietnam vet functions. It's how I learned how to harmonize and how to love an acoustic guitar. And the way that we recorded it, that was my dad's first time in a recording studio, and he always said singers don't really have to work too hard, and he changed his mind that day. Well, we did it live, him and I in the vocal booth together, him playing and singing and me harmonizing. One take, straight through. That was really, really a good time. It was really special to be able to record a song with my dad, the first song I ever learned. We hope you like it, and we dedicate it to all the vets out there.
Stepping off of the plane. Spend they just searching? Spend the nights in dreams. Stop looking over my shoulder, baby. I stop wondering what it means. Drop out, burn out, soldier home. Oh, they said I should have been more. Probably so if I hadn't have been in that crazy damn Vietnam War. We have seen the rain together. We survived the pain forever. Oh, it's good to be home again. It's good to be with my friends. Good to be home again. It's good to feel that
way. Ah, yes. I'm talking about the war. I see the teabaggers will be holding tax day tea parties all around the country. And they're going to have some of them. At least one of them that I know of, at a veterans memorial. They're talking about these things being bipartisan. They're not, by any stretch of the imagination. No Democratic elected official has agreed to participate in these. We know there's at least around 40 Republican lawmakers being involved in them. And in Pittsburgh, Kansas, the teabaggers are going to hold their protest at the Pittsburgh State University Veterans Memorial Amphitheater. And speaking at that event is going to be Representative Lynn Jenkins, Republican of Kansas. And veterans are expressing their concern about having partisan events on this, what they call, hallowed ground. I said it's everybody's right from the veterans group, that's the quote from them, it's everybody's right to have a protest. But our complaint is that it's at the Veterans Memorial. People think of the Veterans Memorial as a sacred place. It's a place to reflect, to remember why we were here today and the people who have sacrificed for that. That's from the American Legion and a number of the Kansas Patriot Guard. I'm not so sure the Veterans Memorial is the appropriate place for a tax protest, says Charles Heath, commander of American Legion Post 64 in the area. This is something that really upsets me. The Veterans Memorial, as far as I'm concerned, is hallowed ground. To have a partisan political tea party there really offends my sensibilities. That's from Bob Torbett, a veteran of the Korean War. Well, I don't think it's right either, but since when do we expect any of these people, any of these so-called conservatives, to do the right thing? Since when? It just doesn't happen anymore, and it's a group that's an embarrassment to the United States of America. I'm trying to understand conservatives. The word's got to mean something. Unless, of course, it doesn't. And I think for years I thought it meant someone like my grandfather, for example. He was a farmer in Ohio. And to me, he embodied courtesy, respect for learning, personal responsibility, compassion for those in the neighborhood who found themselves in distress, stood for dignity. Never met anybody that didn't just love him. He had a love of the country and his family. He was morally opposed to drinking and smoking and swearing and a quiet Christianity. Not having anything in common with what I see as the cruelty and the hostility of today's evangelicals. I thought all that was a pretty decent package, actually. Though I had some problems with the part about avoiding swearing. And over my years of doing this show, I've received a great deal of mail from people, almost entirely the male gender, and they call themselves conservatives. And yet, when I think back upon the comparison, make a comparison between them and what I just explained to you, what I considered a real conservative, and I'm not talking about a political conservative, my grandfather. I'm talking about a man that was conservative in his lifestyle, not in politics, because he was a tight and wool Democrat. But he was a conservative man, as were many people in the rural community. They were conservative people. They had to be. They had to have a love of family. They had to have a love of their neighbor. They wouldn't have survived without the loving each other and taking care of one another. And their families had large families, 14 in my grandfather's family. So he was a conservative man, and he was a Democrat. But these people that I hear from, they call themselves conservatives. They don't have anything in common with my grandpa. And I don't want to claim that all conservatives are bad people, political conservatives, because they're not. But your basic everyday conservative is politically immoral, and they're confused. And these email conservatives are a specific type of person, and I thought a lot about it, and they're characterized by their hostility to other groups. You know what I mean by others? Others. To blacks and Mexicans and homosexuals and Jews, for example. Probably in the earlier days, probably if we went back over 100 years ago, probably some of their ancestors detested the Irish, the Italians, the Asians, and the Slavs. And the second thing I see about these modern-day conservatives that write is I think they view life as some sort of a conflict, a struggle. It's a war to them. You know, we got to arm ourselves. We got to stockpile ammunition. We got to have a closet full of guns. And when it comes to commerce, they see that as a fight to the death, and that we got to prevail by any means necessary. And I mean any means. And you know, we must not become soft and weak. You know the old saying, because only the strong and the resolute will survive in this dog-eat-dog world. You know, that's some sort of, in my opinion anyway, that's some sort of social Darwinism, which says let them starve if they can't keep up. The weaker in the group, let them starve. We're not talking about the animal kingdom here, where, you know, only the strong survive. We're human beings. We're able to think. We're able to look at those less fortunate than us. We're able to look at those who are weaker than us, and we're able to make a determination that we should help them. And with our help, those that are weaker than we are, those that are less fortunate than we are, they can prosper. They can live, and they can survive, and they can have a decent life. But these conservatives that write, they would rather let them die. Let them fall by the wayside. That way we can create a true Aryan, a master race, where we're all strong. And they talk about, well, you know, the evangelicals right now, they think, well, we got to breed like oysters, or the Chinese, or the Muslims and Africans, they're overwhelm us. You think about their comments. The communists, the Russians, the Chinese, the Muslims, they're all insidious, fiendishly patient. It's like they're all waiting. They think they're the others are all just waiting for us to falter so they can take over and enslave us. That's their attitude. I know you've heard this sort of thing. I hear that sort of thing every day. You know, the gates of Vienna. What Lenin said about probing with a bayonet. The protocols of the elders of Zion. Strange shapes. The inner fall. All that sort of thing. Spies are everywhere. Traitors are awaiting their chance. And they look at dissent. Dissent's not dissent, but it's a prelude to treason in their minds. And the conservatives of today, they're not like my grandfather. They're not like him at all. And again, I want to reiterate, he was not a political conservative, but an actual life conservative. Man that lived his life in a conservative way. These people today, these conservatives, they have an obsession with profits and their own economic growth. Not anybody else's, their own. How many times you hear it for their own sake? They don't ask how much growth, of what kind, where, or for what purpose. And they don't ever use the phrase the quality of life. They want more housing starts. They want more construction, more population to buy the houses without regard for anything else. They think people exist to serve the economy, not the other way around. I don't know. I just think that sometimes they look at capitalism as some sort of a supernatural force. They've got some sort of a lack of aesthetic sensitivity. You and I, we might go to California, for example. It's one example I can think of. We might go to California and we might go through the beautiful redwood forest. And when I go there, and I've been there a few times, there's never a time that I can walk in there or the Grand Canyon or Bryce National Park or Glen Canyon or any of those places. There's never a time I can walk in those places and not think about the wonders of nature. There's never a time that I would walk in there and see those towering redwood forests and see it kind of a place as a place of wonder and as a place of contemplation, a place of just solemn ancient beauty and some of God's finest handiwork. The conservative that I'm talking about sees timber suitable for making waterproof decks for yuppies at a good profit. They see whales as dog food. They see the Grand Canyon as a potential tourist bonanza. Most likely only needing a 4-lane highway. And a couple of malls and a few 5-star hotels and a Disneyland park for profit. They're different people. Different people. For them, everything on this earth is raw material for making a buck. And they honestly seem to have no idea why anybody would object to killing everything and bulldozing everything else since there's money in it. They don't understand that. And so therefore, they hate the environmental people as some sort of perverse and irrational beings. And they pick out examples like the spotted owl business and say it's lunacy. They say it's just a freaking bird, for God's sake. Well, one freaking bird, and then another freaking bird, and you know, they see that, and well, hey, we could have a subdivision over there. We could have turned a big buck on that, and then a mall. and an 8-lane highway. And lots of chain restaurants and malls with big box stores. I just see most of them that have almost a total lack of empathy. Not all, but most. Now suppose that squishy, bleeding heart do-gooders object to the employment of children of 10 or 12 hours a day in Indonesian sweatshops, making pricey running shoes for people who don't run. This will infuriate the conservatives. Again, the type of conservative that I'm talking about here. The factory makes money with these kids that labor in it, don't they? The 10, 12 years, it makes money. Photos from war zones of kids with their guts hanging out. What do they say? It's just the communist media trying to sap the Republic's will to fight. They're just showing us those pictures so that we'll all become pacifists. Those kinds of conservatives just don't care. They can't care. And as I've said before, by my statements here, I don't suggest that they're always wrong in their prescription. Sometimes there are enemies abroad. And immigration by incompatible groups may well be inadvisable, and so on and so forth. Yet these same people will find enemies where they are, and a lot of times where they aren't. And they'll oppose immigration whether it makes sense or not, because it's how they think. And whatever wisdom you may find in a particular case, I believe that most of the politics can be explained by frictions between those who have the traits I've just mentioned and those who don't. If you consider empathy and its lack, perhaps the most profound dividing line in politics, do you remember the uproar over the exploitation of migrant workers in California? One side was willing to pay 10 cents a head more for lettuce so that the migrants wouldn't have to live in shacks, and the other side wasn't. And similarly, the Pentagon is perfectly willing to bomb cities and kill indiscriminately to torture prisoners. The other side cringes. An example that reoccurs over and over and over again is the dispute over national medical care. The conservatives oppose it because they say it would become a bloated federal program, as it might. They don't oppose bloated federal programs that produce profits, for example, like the military, but they've sure got deeply principled aversion to anything that might require them to pay taxes. Note that they favor private charity over public welfare because they don't have to pay for the former. If it's all left up to charity, they don't have to contribute to charity. But if it's public, they will have to pay taxes for it. Therefore, they simply can't care what happens to others. And this group, I think, is mostly men. Sorry, guys. Women are scarce in that group, I think. Because, by nature, women do care. I can't recall ever hearing a woman talk about the need for some sort of a preemptive nuclear strike against China. A lot of guys have. Many guys do. All of the type who call themselves conservative. And what happens, of course, is that conscienceless, immoral men dress themselves in whatever ideology suits their purpose. And when it comes right down to it, Stalin was no more a socialist than he was the tooth fairy. But since socialism requires that the state control the economy, it appeals to dictators. Thus, the Union of Socialist Soviet Republics, free enterprise, appeals to those who don't want any interference, who want to run sweatshops, starve sharecroppers, and make billions on subprime mortgages. It's the same people. Different scaffolding. Frankly, I'm weary of them. If I were of another ilk, I would say, if you don't like it, get the hell out. But then again, I'm not like that. Although, I must admit that now and then, it seems like a good idea. I have to wonder where this country would be if, without the likes of Newt Gingrich, without many Newt Gingriches and Phil Grahams and Ronald Reagans. Yes, Ronald Reagans. Another hardcore conservatives who, let's face it, don't give a rat's ass about anybody but their own kind. Let's just face the facts here. Some of them will. Some of the more honest ones will say, no, I don't care about anybody else. I just care about me and my family and their welfare. Some of them will admit to that. And I respect those, at least. I don't like their attitude. I don't agree with their attitude. But I at least respect them for not trying to be phony about it. It's the phony ones that come up and say, oh, no, we're conservatives. We're conservatives, and we're evangelical Christian conservatives, and we care about it. We care, we care, we care. You don't care. You care in as much as it affects you. You care in as much as it affects you and your kids at the local school. You don't give a damn if little Johnny that goes to the school that's not in your family comes and can't afford the school lunch. You don't care if little Johnny can't afford decent clothes to go to school. You care if your kids do. You don't care if little Johnny ever gets to college or not. You don't think any farther than your nose. Because getting little Johnny to college is important not only to little Johnny, but it's important to society. But then again, society is not a word you believe in, is it? Smacks of socialism, doesn't it? Society. I love that word. I always have. I have a wonderful picture of it in my mind. Society. All of us teamed up together, working to go as far as we want to go, working to help one another, to see that no one starves, that everybody has a decent standard of living, all the while realizing that some people are more intelligent than others and will make out better in this life than others. And deservedly so. Some will work harder than others and achieve more, and deservedly so. But at least everybody will see, all of us will collectively see, oh, they hate that word, collective. We'll all collectively see that all the deserving people in this country can eat and live and enjoy life in a dignified manner. And no matter who you are, no matter what darkness visits your door in the way of medical problems, medical bills, that someone will be there. There'll be a societal safety net to save you from disaster. That's what life is about. That's all life is about when it comes down to it. It's working for one another on this God's green earth and taking care of this God's green earth and making it last for eons to come as best we can to be good stewards of the land. Be good stewards of the air and the water, the things that we've been provided, so that we can live. The natural resources should be used wisely, so that we can all live a decent lifestyle. That's socialism, though, isn't it? To care about everybody else in society is socialism. And it's a dirty word in this country. And they've succeeded in making it a dirty word. And I, for one, are proud. I am proud. I am damn proud that I believe in some socialistic things. I believe that we need to all throw in together to have a good military. I believe that we all need to throw in together to have a decent health care system in this country. I believe that we all need to throw in together and have our good roads and our governmental entities that inspect our airplanes and our food and our water and our air quality. I believe in all of that. No, the conservatives of today are not like my grandfather. I am biased. In one way, I wish everybody were like my grandfather. My grandfather Guy, by the way, was his name. Family, neighbors, country, it all meant a lot to him. And the conservatives of the day will just tell you that their own family and their country, the way they see their country, that's what's most important to them. Oh, would that things were different. Would that everybody would feel approximately the same. Would that everybody would understand where you and I, we liberals, we, and the word does still stick in my throat, progressives. I think we have good ideas for the country. I truly do. That's why we all fought so hard to elect President Barack Obama. He's not perfect. He's done several things so far that I'm not real happy with. But when you stop and think about the alternative, when you stop and think that John McCain could have been the president heading overseas and probably telling the Europeans to go straight to hell at the G20, or grabbing the Chancellor of Germany's neck and giving her a neck rub again, I don't know. It's killing them. It's just killing them that Barack Obama's ratings are doing so well. It's killing them that he's admired around the world by developed nations and the peoples of other nations. It's killing them that it's a black man in many cases. And we're going to discuss that in a program coming up real soon about how the racist and the militias and all those folks are going hog wild right now. It's hard for them to get out from under that image because it is part of who they are. Nobody's ever going to convince me of any different that most of the racists in this country reside in the Republican Party, call themselves conservatives or libertarians or whatever the hell a libertarian is. It's a Republican that doesn't want to admit he's a Republican anymore. I think that's what it is, probably. I do want you to remember once again that the show, and I've rambled on long enough here, we'll have this phone problem fixed tomorrow. I do want you to remember that this is a listener-supported program, and you've heard me talk about it and the need for it right now. We're having our second quarter drive to raise money for the program, for the Guy James Show. Visit our blog. You can see the progress of it and my thoughts on it, if you would. I would appreciate you doing that, thegyjamesshow.com/blog. I want you to know my thoughts and feelings about the fundraiser that we're having right now. We'll talk about it more during the week. But please do visit the blog. Some of you have and have written me notes, and I appreciate that very much, very, very much. Well, I've rambled on quite a bit today. Sorry about the phone problems. We'll have that fixed by tomorrow, or what? I don't know. I don't know, or what. That's always a good one, or what. But we'll be back tomorrow, and we'll talk about another subject. Hopefully, we can get Professor Boer back on to talk about the bioterrorism, a fascinating subject, and what we need to look out for. Maybe what we need to look out for most of all as far as bioterrorism is not from on the other side of our borders, but maybe from within, maybe from some of the people psychologically that even work in some of these bio labs around the country. That's one of the things that he likes to talk about, so we will do that. Anyway, you're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We hope you'll join us tomorrow. I'll look forward to being back with you tomorrow. And in the meantime, don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Later, gang.